This is a live educational teletalk that is being recorded. The podcast is provided by Terry O'Hara, professional animal communicator, and it is the property of AnimalWise, LLC. Please do not duplicate, sell, or forward this recording. If you have any questions or comments regarding the content of this talk or animal communication, they can be directed to Terry's website at www.animalwise.com. That's www.animalwise.com. Enjoy the talk. We are doing our talk today on helping our elder animals. Anybody that has loved an animal probably has had to go through the elder stages, and if you have an elder in your life now, you understand how important it is to get some support and help around this topic. And if you know and love other people that have elders, it's not easy. It's not an easy journey. It is a journey, I guess is the best way to say it. So just as a reminder, I'm going to ask everybody to do *6 to mute their phone unless they have their own mute button. Okay. And everybody that's on the call has been on a call before, so I'm going to skip the first part that explains teletalks to save a little more time for all of us to have more talk time. Okay, and so let's move on right on into defining an elder. First of all, one of the things that I've noticed lately is a lot of veterinarians these days are expecting us to identify animals as elders. Well, in particular, cats and dogs is what I'm hearing. They call cats elders or seniors, might be how they're saying it, at the age of 7, and I've heard they're saying dogs at the age of 5. And, boy, that's really troublesome to me. I feel very upset when I hear that, and as I wrote on my notes here for the talk, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying into that way of thinking, and I would encourage all of you to not buy into that way of thinking. I'm assuming that veterinarians have come up with those numbers, unfortunately, because cats and dogs are dying younger and younger. That's not a reason for accepting them to have a shorter lifespan, though. My last kitty who passed away died at 23, had a wonderful, long, healthy life. My dogs who both passed last year, large dogs, you know, you hear that they're not supposed to live a real long time if they're larger, and, you know, Jake was part Malamute and part Australian Shepherd, and he lived till 14, and Shiloh was a very large, big-bone Aussie, 70-pound Aussie, and she lived till 15, and they both lived quality, healthy lives into their, what I consider, elder years. So I would like people to start thinking beyond those numbers, because, in my opinion, if we buy into that and we think that way, then we're affecting the outcome of how our animals live. Now, with that said, of course, there's all kinds of situations. There's diseases, there's illnesses, et cetera, that can cause an animal to age younger, as well as just like with humans. But there's no reason why animals should be dying younger and younger. The reason, however, that a lot of holistic vets will tell you is it's their food. First and foremost, it has a lot to do with the food that we're feeding them. Definitely doesn't have anything to do with the quality of life or love from at least all of my clients and the types of people that I run into. So their quality of life hasn't changed. If anything, their quality of life has improved. Animals have much more active lives, much more social lives. They're pampered, they're adored. So it's not about quality of life so much as it is, if we look at their body as a machine, what are we doing for the machine? What are we doing when they're young? And what are we doing as they get older? And how do we change things as they get older? Because how do their needs change? So we've already had the talks on nutrition, so we're not going into that. But I just want to emphasize, if you think of your animal as somebody you want around as long as possible, then food is a big, big, big factor. That and over-vaccination is another big factor. There are many studies out now that are proving that we are over-vaccinating animals, and that's been in my newsletters before. That's a whole other topic, and I'm not a veterinarian, so I'm not an expert on it, but I resource people out to websites. I think it's very important for you to get educated and make smart decisions around that. Anything that's going to beat up their immune system, that's going to affect how their organs function and how their body functions, such as vaccines too frequently or poor nutrition, is going to cause their body, which is, again, a machine, it's going to cause their body to simply begin to shut down faster and faster, deteriorate faster and faster. So I want us all thinking about, I know you want your animals around as long as possible, but I want you to start thinking about the ages that are potentials for them and think outside the box. And also, aging is an okay thing. However, in our culture, again, I'm back on people. If you look in our culture, aging's not an okay thing. I mean, you cannot, I can't, turn on my computer and access my emails via AOL and probably daily not see something about making your body look younger, making your body thinner, making your wrinkles go away, making your gray hair go away. We have in this country a phobia of aging, an intense phobia of aging. And so, unfortunately, we are not taught how to deal with aging very well. We're definitely not taught how to embrace it. But animals actually do embrace it. Animals are not freaked out about dying, and they don't mind that they're aging. It's not necessarily easy, but they definitely don't mind that it's occurring in the same ways that humans do. So we're going to go into that in detail. So I would say that when our animals that we love begin to age, it's much harder on the humans than it is on the animals. So if you can begin to own your own stuff about where am I freaking out, where am I worried, if you're worrying constantly about an animal that maybe can't run around like they used to, but their tail is still wagging and they're happy, I'm picturing a dog right now, and they're happy and they're joyful and they love their life, but perhaps they limp a little bit once in a while, don't start getting all heavy and serious and depressed about it, because they're going to wonder what the heck is wrong, and you're going to affect the outcome of how they are, being with the quality of life. I just want to interrupt one second. Somebody doesn't have their phone on mute because I can hear them shuffling their phone back and forth, moving it around. So everybody just say your name and we'll see who comes through that thinks they're on mute. Okay, not sure who I'm hearing then. All right, I just thought that would help. So if you think you're not on mute, hit star 6 again. Okay. And so in regards to aging, let's look at the rest of this talk from the perspective of where are we as the humans with this topic versus where are the animals with this topic, okay? Because I think both are very important components. So dogs don't like slowing down, for example, very much. It's hard for them to slow down. So I hear, you know, animals, I just did a consult yesterday, and the woman was checking in on her elder dog, and she has a younger dog as well, and the elder dog said, well, I really don't like it that I can't run as fast as I used to, because I used to love to beat him when we would run on, when we would be on walks and I was running free and I used to love to be in the lead. But it doesn't mean they're suffering. It doesn't mean they're miserable. It's just harder to slow down. Same with humans. Cats don't like the ability to not be as agile. Cat, as we know, cats love to jump high. They love to be clever and creative and be as agile as possible. Well, that's kind of hard on them when their body changes and shifts and they're not as agile as they used to be. But again, it's not miserable and it's not gosh-awful. It's just a part of the aging process that they have to face. Another example would be horses don't like to feel less important. You know, sometimes when horses get older and they've been being in shows or riding with their human or just doing things that help them feel they have an important purpose in their human's life, when they get older, a lot of times I have clients that will say, well, you know, unfortunately I work with people that retire their horses but still love them till the end as opposed to just selling them off. And so they often will say, though, but I still need purpose. Just because I might be a little lame or, you know, it's wonderful that she's not making me do jumping anymore because that's not good for my back, it's true, but I still want to feel important. So purpose is important for all animals, but those are just some examples of different ones. So to just remember that aging happens to all of us, and the animals are here to show us the way. Death and dying happens to all of us, and the animals are here to show us how to do it. So if you can think of your animals as teachers, they want to gracefully teach you. They may stumble and have some struggles of their own with what it's like, and I'm going to give you some examples later with my two dogs and how different Jake was as he aged versus Shiloh. But they also still want to show you it's okay. And I've had many animals say during consultations that part of what's happening for them is they come into this world with the purpose of showing us how to live through our lives, how to be joyful, how to embrace the moment, how to not let things bother us so much, how to let go of worry, how to age, and how to die. Those are just some examples of why they're in our life. So don't be afraid of allowing them to age, and don't be afraid of allowing them to die, because they feel very important, and that's part of why their lives are shorter and why they can come and offer so very many gifts to us. Alrighty. So let's look at elderly traits. And again, I did mention, maybe all of you didn't hear this at the beginning, I got quite a few questions this time, which is wonderful. A couple of the questions I've incorporated into the talk, and then the others I've saved for the end. If there's any time when we're finished, I'll take questions on the call, but I don't know that there will be time. Elderly traits. So how do you know when an animal is becoming an elder? You know, what do you see? One of the things that I know is that we're busy going through life like speeding bullets. In our life, we often go through, just fast. We are buzzing around. We hop in the car. We drive someplace fast. We're hurrying up. We got to keep on time. We got to get to work on time. We got to get home. We got to get to the appointment. We got to take our kids somewhere. We got to do this. We got to do that. We watch TV, even TVs, you know, on a time thing. So in the animal's perspective, we are zooming. We, the humans, are zooming through life. And so one of the things you notice when you're zooming through life is how different your animals act. And when they begin to shift and become elders, they slow down even more. So one of the traits that you're going to notice with elders is simply slowing down. That's not a bad thing. They may sleep a little bit more. They may slow down on a walk. You may be taking them on same walk for a few years, same location. And all of a sudden you notice they're stopping and pausing a lot more. And it doesn't mean they're suffering. It's just they're slowing down. And so what you have to start watching for is, what are we expecting? Because we've just been plodding through life and zooming right through life. And they've been young and agile and healthy and strong, hopefully, and had a good life and moving forward. And then, I'm noticing some changes. So some of the changes of the elderly traits would be sleeping more. Another would be if they're not responding to instructions or rules. I hear this a lot. I had a client with a golden retriever, and she said she's been so good her whole life. And now when we're out on a walk in open space and she's off leash, I call her and she doesn't come. Is her hearing okay? And I check in and the dog says, yeah, I can hear her. And then she says, but why isn't she listening? And sometimes the answer is, because I'm taking my time and I'll be with you in a minute, and they're not being obstinate, they're not being bad, they're just kind of doing what they want for a change, or following their own rules a little bit. So this is something that is a common trait of elders, elder animals, is they may not respond as well to instructions. This doesn't mean they're going to run out and get hit by a car. They're not going to do stupid stuff, but they start to slow down, and they wonder, you know, why are you rushing so much, and why are you sweating the small stuff so much? I'll be with you in a minute. And I know that's hard for us when we, you know, we have to get somewhere. We got to finish this walk because I got to get to work on time, etc. But just notice that sometimes, just like with people, I mean, what do you hear elder people say? They often say they love breaking the rules. You know, you've kind of earned your way up to the place of elder, and you've followed rules in society, and you've done what you're supposed to do, and you've been good. And a lot of times they like breaking rules. They like doing things a little bit differently. And I've heard people say, I've got gray hair. I've earned my right to not have to stand in this line, or however they say it. And it's very fun for me to see, because I'm not there yet, but there's something about when you get to an elder stage that you get to rebel, or you feel you get to rebel. And often it's in jest and it's lighthearted. But animals do the same thing. So not responding to instructions or rules is a sign of them beginning to be elders or being elders. Spacey actions is another that I wrote down. Sometimes clients will ask me, why is my dog walking in the room and just kind of standing there? What do they need? Does he need food? Does he need a walk? Does he need to go potty outside? Does he need me to pet him? You know, I can't figure out what he needs. Well, you know what? Neither can he, perhaps. He might just be kind of going, what was I doing a minute ago? I'm not sure, huh? Oh, okay, I think I was going to go over to my dog bed and lay down. Yeah, that's it, yeah. So his thought process is going a little bit slower, just like elder humans. So sometimes people are busy worrying about, well, what does he need? What am I missing? And just allow them to be in the moment for a little bit longer. Their moments go a little slower. Their moments get a little longer. Along with that, though, can be sometimes people will say, well, he or she is wandering aimlessly. You know, they might say, well, my rabbit is, you know, just hopping around her space and just looks like she can't figure out what to do with herself. Or my dog is walking back and forth and back and forth in the living room like there's a purpose and I can't figure out what he or she wants to do. Or the kitty just doesn't seem to settle down and jumps up in the window and then jumps down and jumps back up and jumps down, but I can't figure it out. So I call this wandering aimlessly, whether it's, you know, literally wandering around or movements. And I believe, personally, from when I've tuned into animals, sometimes that's a little bit of dementia. Sometimes they are like people. We get forgetful. We get more and more forgetful as we get older and older. And so do they. They can get a little spacey. And so sometimes the wandering aimlessly can be associated with that. And then some of these traits, as I go into them a little bit more, we have to also realize on the flip side of, oh, she or he's just becoming an elder or in the process of being an elder, also on the other side of that is there might be an illness, there might be a problem. So an example of the wandering aimlessly is my neighbor, when I lived in Colorado, had a little dog, and her name was Cassie, and Cassie was 15, and all of a sudden Cassie started wandering aimlessly around her house, and she wasn't sure what was going on, and I helped her understand that she was just getting older, and then she would let her outside. We lived in the mountains, and she didn't have a fenced-in yard, but Cassie had lived there her whole life, always just went out, did her business, came back in, never left her property, was always safe. And all of a sudden, Mary was finding Cassie running up the hillside in a direction she had never gone her whole life. And I was explaining to Mary, well, you know, they get a little senile, and you might have to watch her a little bit more now. She forgets where she is. She forgets where she's headed. And this was all over a period of many months. But then it got to the point where all of a sudden Cassie was running around in circles and wouldn't stop. And she was just running in circles and running in circles and running in circles. And when she took her to the doctor, it turned out that she had a brain tumor. And so sometimes we go from watching, is this an elderly trait? Are they just shifting and changing? But if something gets severe, if something changes, if something needs to be attended to, because we're feeling, pay attention to your gut first and foremost. We're feeling like it's just not right. We're feeling like it's changed. We're feeling like it's gotten severe. Then that's a good time to get them checked if you haven't had them into the vet recently. And so she needed a medication that decreased swelling in her brain, and then that calmed her down, and she was able to sleep again because she was pacing for hours sometimes. When Mary would go to work, I would go over and check on her and potty break her, and she would be running in circles almost the whole time. So it was kind of sad to see, but she was able to find out what was going on. So that's an example of, all right, so they're wandering. Okay, so they're spacey. Okay, so they're not quite clear-headed. All the way to the point of, no, this isn't right. Something's really shifted now, okay? And then barking at nothing. You know, I was just in Colorado teaching, and when I was there, I stayed with some friends of mine, and they have a 14-year-old lab, and her name is Toby. And Toby is driving them crazy, as they say, which I can understand, but she can't walk very well anymore, and she can't do a whole lot, and there's a younger dog in the house, and so she just lays in the living room and will bark. She'll just bark at nothing, as according to them. But she's really not barking at nothing. So a lot of times if you have animals that are making sounds, or, you know, you're used to finding, okay, there's a bark, what's the solution? What's the request? What's the answer? And sometimes it's just they're calling out. She's not real happy. It doesn't mean she's ready to be euthanized. She's just not real happy about the fact that she can't hop up. She can't run to the door like she used to. She can't run to the window. She can't go up and down the stairs real fast and keep up with the young whippersnapper doggy who's only three. Her life as she knew it is coming to a close, and it's very hard for her. So they do have their emotional process of accepting aging, and they need this opportunity. But it's hard for her, and it's also hard for the humans, because they say, Toby, what do you need, honey? What do you need? Can you just settle? And, you know, sometimes she'll be in the living room facing the kitchen, 10 feet away from the kitchen. They're right in the kitchen fixing dinner, and she's bark, bark, barking. It's not rational. So some of the traits and some of the things you might be dealing with your animals, or know people who are dealing with things, are not rational. So if you're asking a rational question, why are you barking, you're not perhaps going to get a rational answer, because it might be an irrational behavior. She is barking because she just is at a loss as to what to do with herself, and she's emoting, is what I was trying to help them understand. She's emoting. If she was a human, she'd probably be a complainer. She'd probably be the type that's like, I don't like it that I can't move. I'm uncomfortable in this chair. I'm tired of sitting here. You know, I don't like how this feels. So she might be a complainer. She might be someone that's not really happy about her limitations. But I reminded them, and I want you all to realize, it's part of the process of preparing to transition. She needs this process. She needs to understand her body is not what it used to be, so she can begin to embrace her impending transition. And there's, you know, ways around that to make life more comfortable for both of them. I suggested an herbal supplement that veterinarians recommend for calming an animal down, and they were going to try that. If that doesn't work, I said it might be worth it to go to doggy Valium and give her a Valium every evening and just let her crash and let her go to sleep and let her take a break. But I suggested they do see the vet on that. But to start to understand, there's not going to always be a rational answer for every behavior you're trying to figure out or everything that's going on, okay? And that's hard for us humans because we, as caregivers, we want to make it better for them and we want to make it better right away. And sometimes we can't. Sometimes we have to just let them have their process and then try and comfort them and comfort ourselves to make the situation a little more doable or tolerable. Another example is yowling, and one of you did put a question on there. What does it mean when my cat is walking around the house yowling? Like, as in right now, when I write this question. And so yowling and calling out can often mean they're losing their hearing. And when they lose their hearing, they're used to walking through the world and hearing background sounds. They're used to hearing the rumble of the trees outside, or they're used to hearing people talking, or they're used to hearing the hum of the refrigerator, or anything. They're used to the sound effects of their home. And when that starts to go away, if you can imagine just plugging your ears, they start to feel vulnerable because they wonder, where are my bearings? I don't quite have my bearings anymore. I don't quite know what's going on. Has anybody walked in the house since I last was near the front door? I don't know because I can't hear any sound effects. And so sometimes they're calling out, so to speak, again, not because they have a specific need that needs to be met, but they can be calling out because they're confused about reality because they don't have their frame of reference that they've depended on their whole life. And we take that for granted. You know, we have this same frame of reference. We hear sound effects all the time. Our brains are constantly saying, oh, here comes the kitty in the room. I can hear the tags jingling. But we might be working at the computer, but our brain just gave us that piece of information based on what our ears heard. We didn't stop and turn and look at the cat, but there's constant information registering with our ears and especially with their ears. So sometimes the yowling or the calling out, as I call it, with their voice, because I've seen all animals do this, can kind of be, where am I? I'm losing my bearings. And so to comfort them, to use touch is very important, to offer your hands on them, to clap your hands and see if they can still hear the clapping, to just guide them to, you know what, you just ate dinner and we're all good and we're going to sit down and watch a movie, so come on, this is what we're doing next. So sometimes just instruct them on what's next, if you can. That's not always going to happen if there's no instruction to offer, but sometimes just like taking a child by the hand and saying, well, this is what we're going to do next, come on, this is what we're doing. So you have to guide elders sometimes and just help them, because loss of hearing and loss of eyesight can be very scary. And they will start to feel more vulnerable. They will start to feel like they can't be the animal they once were. They will start to lose their bearings on the house. If they are a protector, if their role in the family is to be a protector and they can't see or hear very well, they start to get a little panicky sometimes because they feel like, I can't do my job. I'm trying to hear. I can't see what that is. And they can get anxious. They can get anxious about it. So working with an animal communicator on a lot of these issues is helpful for the animal to understand what's going on and for the human to understand what's going on and to come into a more peaceful place. Sometimes medical care is what's needed. Sometimes conversation is needed. Sometimes herbal supplementation or stronger meds are needed. So it can really vary. And with that, I just want to give an example. Yowling, also with cats, can be a sign of hyperthyroidism in elder cats. My kitty that lived till 23, when she was 19, she all of a sudden out of the clear blue started walking in the living room in the middle of the night and sounded like she was in heat, just yowling and yowling. And when I knew that that was wrong, and she told me, I don't feel good, I don't feel right, I don't feel good, I got her into the vet and learned at that point, this is many years ago, that that's a classic symptom of hyperthyroidism, because what's going on is their thyroid is buzzing so fast that they're burning up all their calories, so they're eating, but burning calories and actually losing weight. And so if you could imagine, it would be like somebody turning up your metabolism on way too fast by accident, and you feel like you're hungry all the time, and you start feeling panicky, and you start feeling urgent, because your brain's telling you, I think we're starving, I think we're starving, when you really aren't. So that's an example of how much are they yowling? What are you feeling or sensing when they are yowling? Do they look a little distraught? Are they otherwise okay? Or are they dropping weight? Are they eating a lot more? Are they drinking a lot more? So are there other things going on that says, I got to get him or her into the vet? So, again, I'm emphasizing here that there's elderly traits, and then there can be borderline, we're moving into health issues. And there's no way to tell you, you know, sit here and tell you, oh, a certain yowl is going to be hyperthyroidism, and a different yowl is going to be, I'm going deaf and I can't hear things. So every circumstance is going to be unique. But your jobs are to let changes happen, and then notice when they seem to be escalating or are joined by other symptoms. Another elderly trait is despondent behavior. A client of mine has a bunny, for example, and she's always been very social, and she's always been very friendly with the other rabbits and with the people, and she just doesn't want to socialize anymore. She doesn't want to groom. She doesn't want to do anything. She's taken her to the vet. The vet says she's healthy. But she's just coming to a close, and it's okay. She's preparing to go, she's going within, I should say, going within her own being to prepare to leave her body. She's not unhappy. She's eating. She's peeing. She's pooping. But she's just kind of despondent, and sometimes that's hard for us to see. It's not as bad as, you know, the gosh-awful image we can all get in our heads if we think of a worst-case scenario at a nursing home where it's just so sad to see somebody sitting in a wheelchair in a hallway just staring at a wall. And unfortunately for them, they don't have the option of, I'd like some help out of this world because I'm feeling really done. But sometimes the animals do need a chance to just go within, and they're telling their bodies. I've gotten messages from them when I'm asking, because what you do as an animal communicator is you say, what are you feeling when you are doing that? So when I asked her, what are you feeling when you're behaving that way? She says, very peaceful, very centered, and I'm fading. I'm beginning to fade. So that's her way of beginning to let her spirit start to differentiate from the body and begin to float out of the body. My elder kitty, one of the things she did when probably the last year of her life, you know, by the way, after I got her on the thyroid meds, she was fine instantly, and so that was 19. She lived, you know, 4 more healthy years. But in her last year, she'd be sound asleep, just, you know, really peaceful, totally in a deep sleep, middle of the day, whatever, and all of a sudden I'd hear, and at first I'd run in and check on her, and then I realized I didn't have to. And I asked her, what are you doing? And she said, well, I'm practicing. And I've had other animals tell me this since. And I said, practicing what? She said, practicing leaving my body. So when she would get into a really, really deep sleep, she was allowing her spirit to start to feel floaty and start to go out. But when she would wake up, it was like crash bang back into the body. So it would kind of startle her. It kind of reminded me of amusement park ride, you know, where the thing drops and your stomach kind of goes funny. But she was always fine. She'd let out a cry, and then she'd look around and go, oh, I'm fine. I must have awakened. Oh, yeah, I got to go to the potty. I got to go litter box, you know, and she would realize why she had come back into her body. But animals will often do this. They will practice, and I have a lot of clients say with their elders, yeah, when she's sound asleep, I can walk in from home, you know, from work. Never, ever did she sleep through that, even sometimes when their hearing is fine. I can go straight to the kitchen. She always ran in for biscuits. But what I say is sometimes they're not quite in their bodies, and that's an okay thing because they're very powerful spiritual beings, and I wish that humans could have this ability too, because I think their death could be a much smoother and more joyful transition like the animals can be. So once in a while when they are being despondent, it can mean they're practicing, as my kitty taught me the term practicing. However, again, on the other side of despondent, if they're not eating, if they're not wanting to get up, if they're peeing or pooping on themselves, you know, then a lot more can be going on. They can be feeling so sick they don't want to move. So I don't mean to that extreme, but just kind of a spacey, not quite with you, little bit zoned out, or really, really, really deep sleep. And another elderly trait would be sometimes people say, well, you know, they don't want to interact anymore. I have a client who said for her horse, who was 33, and she said, you know, she's just stopped socializing with the other horses. She just goes off and stands to the side. And she asked me, is she okay? I mean, is she unhappy? Because they've all been together. She had five horses that have all been together for all these years. They've always socialized. They've been taking care of the elder for a long time. They gather around her. They check on her. If it's cold out, they kind of stand near her. So, she, you know, she was like the grandma of the horses. But all of a sudden, she started just standing off to the side, and they, the other horses, knew to not bother her. So, you know, to the human, that looked sad. To the human, that was hard to see. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I don't want her off by herself, and how come the others seem to be ignoring her? So sometimes animals will isolate themselves or become loners, and what they're doing is they're trying to decrease the amount of energetic stimulation they take in. Every time you go to them, every time other animals come to them, we all come with our energy fields. If they're trying to wind down and let go, if they're getting ready to prepare to transition, they don't want external stimulation. It would be just like, you know, if you came home from work and you had a bad day and you lit a candle, you've got some peaceful music playing and you made yourself a nice hot cup of tea and the house is all quiet and you know, just some nice, quiet, peaceful music and you're going, ah, and then your roommate or family member comes home and they slam the door, they don't mean to, and their footsteps are really loud and they go in the kitchen and they open and close cupboards and they decide to cook themselves something. They're just doing their thing, but it can feel really extreme. It can feel really loud. It can feel invasive because energetically their energy field is in a very different space than yours is. So if you can imagine, sometimes when the animals are just feeling peaceful and quiet and we come up and we're like, are you okay? Do you need anything? I'm so worried about you. You didn't eat very much dinner. You know, is there anything you need? Is there anything you need me to do? What else should I be doing for you? If you could imagine what that feels like sometimes, I think sometimes they'd like to look up and just flick us away like a bug. Like, you're bugging me. Could you just back off? I am fine. I am going within. I am being peaceful. I am preparing to go. So isolating or no longer interacting with others, if it's appearing peaceful and if it's feeling, you know, okay, can often be the journey they need before they transition. Okay, so those are several traits that I've listed, and we probably could go on and on with many more of them. But I really want to emphasize again, we have elderly traits, and then we have challenges, and then we have illnesses, and those are very interwoven avenues. So just know that these are some of the more common ones. I'm sure all of you have experienced at least some of these with animals you love. And then there are some more specifics that were asked about that we'll get to in the questions, okay? So main areas of wellness care. What do we do for our elders? And how should we do anything differently? So as I mentioned, nutrition is extremely key for animals. And it's especially important for aging animals. When I have someone tell me, and I know they mean well because that's what they were taught to do, but when they tell me they have a 12-year-old dog and he's been on the same dry food his whole life and he's getting arthritic and he doesn't have much energy, when I tune into that animal, if you could feel what I feel, the dog is saying, oh my God, could I have anything else to eat? Please. Because the body, if you were to eat the same thing day in and day out, the body gets bored. The body says, all right, here's these nutrients. We're used to those coming in. But if we give variety, and I don't mean you have to start changing the diet every single day, but if we offer variety, the body goes, oh, there's more vitamin C this time. Good, let's take that. Let's take that and use that. Okay, oh, yeah, there's some other stuff coming in over here. Great, we've been needing that. So if it's the same thing coming in and going out, it's like a locomotive. It's just the whole digestive tract is like a locomotive. My neighbor here in Oregon, I have a new friend a couple houses over, and she has an elderly dog, and since I work from home, I go potty break her if she's going to have a long day and can't get home. And so fortunately, I was really glad because I, you know, can't help but mention once in a while about food, and she is 11-year-old lab, and she's doing good, but she's been on the same dry food her whole life, and her energy field feels to me like it's sluggish, and she's not sick, but it's sluggish, and her hair is dull, and she sheds a lot, and that's all signs of I'm just not as vibrant as I could be. So I've kind of, you know, planted a couple seeds about food, and also she has an obese cat that eats free-feeding dry, and so I've planted a couple seeds, but I'm very careful to not offend somebody, and so she did finally hire me, she said, you know, I'm really ready to do a consultation. And she has changed their diet, and she is so thrilled at the changes she is seeing in them. But especially Maggie, her 11-year-old doggy, is just, I just went over the other day and I was throwing the tennis ball for her for a little potty break, and she is bouncing and doing circles. And what she's done, she's added meat to her diet. She's still got her on the same dry food. I think she may be changing it over. But I said, give her some meat. Her body really is craving some meat. And it's only been a few weeks. And Maggie is whistling Dixie and so happy, and the kitty is starting to drop some weight. So we don't realize sometimes when we get stuck in our patterns how important simple changes can be. But when we're talking elders, I have to tell you, if you want your animals to have as vibrant an energy and as happy of a life for as long as possible, you must pay attention to what you're feeding them. And they must have real food that has energy in it. Dry food is dead food, which has been processed, and so it's got a certain energy level. Well, your animal's body is going to match that kind of energy level. If you put yogurt or you put some vegetables or you add different things, those have a higher vibration, a higher energy level, and guess what? So will your animals. They will directly reflect the energy that's going in and fueling their energy sources. And with that, supplementation is very important. So they need more vitamins and minerals. And I'm not going to go into what to supplement for or with, et cetera, because it varies on the animals, and I'm also not a veterinarian. I do offer some suggestions. I almost always ask if an elderly dog or cat is, if they're dealing with stiffness or arthritis or immobility in any way, are they on a joint formula? Are they on a good formula to support their joints? For kitties, there's Cosequin. I think there's something called Arthroflex. There's longevity is one that I recommend for dogs. If they won't eat that because it's a powder and some dogs get picky, that same company has another one, I think, called Joint Mobility, and it's a chewable. But there's lots on the market, and ideally work with a holistic vet to have the best quality of life for your animals. It will make a huge difference in how long they last. And so an example of that is a client of mine who's worked with me for almost 10 years now, and she has 3 horses, and her elder horse, it just started not looking great. He wasn't sick, he wasn't horrible, but she's so fine-tuned, and she uses me regularly, and she says, what's up? He's feeling a little off to me. And sure enough, he said, you know, I'm ready for a vitamin mineral supplement. I just need an extra boost. I can't quite get it from the food. And as soon as she put him on that, she called her vet. Vet said what she, her holistic vet said what she recommended. She ordered it, got him on it. When I tuned into him the next month, I felt like I was talking to a different horse. He was like, oh, thank you so much. I just feel so much better. He was moving better. His coat started to improve. His energy level improved. And it was something as simple as a vitamin mineral supplement. So often, if you can think of our own bodies, when we get older, we slow down. It gets harder to move around. The better we eat, the more we supplement, the more we're helping the machine, known as the body, to keep on going well. Exercise and play are also very important for wellness care. I just went to a new vet here in town, new to me, she was talking to me about my kitty who is marking because there's kitties coming up to the window outside, which has never happened because I lived in the mountains before, and there were no kitties outside on the acres that I lived on. And this is new for him, so he started marking, but I took him in just to check. He told me he was fine, but I thought, I can't not have his urine checked, so I took him in. And one of the things she said, which I was so impressed to hear, is she said, play therapy is very important for cats that are stressed. And I just loved that she said that. And I used to do play therapy for humans when I was a health educator many, many years ago. And to hear her refer to it as play therapy, because it is therapy, she said 10 minutes a day, twice a day, will de-stress your cat because of the hormones and the pheromones and everything that shifts in their body with the circulation. So she's, you know, we talked about other things that I'm doing to deter the cats from coming up to the house, but to help him de-stress. I just loved it that she said that, and I had already had that down, of course, for our elders. Just because they can't move around as well doesn't mean they can't play. My dog Jake, for any of you that knew him, his last few years of his life, because of a leg injury and a knee surgery and stuff, he couldn't move very well, so I had to help him with the harness and help him walk. But he could play laying down, and he would play with his toys, and I'd get him going, and he'd roll around and bark and get excited. In his past, he used to always run around and do that, but he still had plenty of fun playing. He just didn't get up and get on his legs to play. So play therapy is very important, and a lot of times I hear people say, well, my cat doesn't do a whole lot. She just sleeps a lot. And I say, how old is she? 9. That's not an old cat. That's an usually an undernourished cat, an overweight cat, and a lazy cat. And so they're not old. Don't accept that they're getting older. Just say, what can we do to get you more vibrant? What can we do to get you more happy? How about a treat? How about I'll give you a couple treats, but you got to run across the floor for them, and you got to get them, and we'll turn it into a game. So a lot of those are tiny baby steps that you can make that can have a huge, significant difference. So moving around is very important. And with horses, even if you're not riding them, I highly recommend that you walk them. Take them out and go for a walk. If it's not good to get on their back anymore because of arthritis or whatever, they still need to walk. They still need the mental stimulation of something different. Sometimes I have people say, well, because he's older and feels a little vulnerable, I keep him in a stall and I let him out for a couple of hours. Well, that's kind of the worst thing you can do for him, because then he's getting stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. So movement is extremely important. And if you're thinking, well, my dog doesn't move very well, then find the compromised version. Can you take him to a dog therapy pool, and can you swim him? Can you lay on the floor and belly rub him and get him to kick his legs around when you're belly rubbing, because he gets playful? Because that's like physical therapy for him. So movement, 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 exercise, play, which is, of course, also fun. Pain control is another area of wellness care that's very important. And, you know, as somebody asked, how do we know if they're in pain? And working with an animal communicator is going to be the answer to a lot of these, because you have to fine-tune a lot of this. However, you know your animals better than anybody. And if you find that your animals are slowing down or limping or stiff getting up or slow to get up or don't want to, you know, do something that they used to love to do, then these are examples of you paying attention and tuning in. And there are natural anti-inflammatories. There are herbal, one that I recommend for dogs that several clients have used. I've never used it with mine, but many clients have had success with it. It's called Dog Gone Pain, and their website is that, doggonepain.com. Many veterinarians recommend that. But there are also other natural anti-inflammatory supplements. I mentioned the Cosequin for cats, the Longevity, et cetera. So a lot of these are helping with the joints, helping with fluidity in the joints, and some of them are specific herbal formulas to decrease inflammation. So that's a great place to start, in my opinion, when you have an animal that is middle-aged, to start on supplementation to offer them comfort and to offer them ease with their joints so things don't progress as rapidly. And then they will get to the point where they're going to need some medications. I mean, I got to the point with Jake that if he didn't have his Medicam, which is a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, he really couldn't move very well that day. So as much as I don't like using drugs, I loved being able to offer him that, because that gave him quality of life and comfort. So there may come the time when you're going to ask your vet about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications. Some of them have side effects with the liver. Be very careful. Make sure you ask a lot of questions. Make sure you get your blood tested, get the animal's blood tested to watch the liver enzymes, I mean. I had a veterinary friend that when she first put Jake on Rimadyl before Medicam came out, she said, I want to do his blood before we put him on it, and I want to do his blood 1 month afterwards, and then another 3 months afterwards. And she said that was the protocol that the company that put out Rimadyl recommended. And since then, when I ask clients whose vets have put their dogs on Rimadyl, I'll say, have you had their blood tested since? No, the vet didn't mention it. So I don't know what's happened with that, but many of them are ending up with liver problems. So make sure you ask a lot of questions and you work with a vet that you trust. And then she called me one day to tell me Medicam had come out, and she thought that I would want to switch Jake to Medicam because it wasn't as hard on the liver. So that was nice of her to do. But so, and there's a new one out that a client mentioned recently that I don't even remember the name of. So there's new things all the time. So make sure you ask a lot of questions about symptoms or side effects. Okay? And then tramadol is a nice pain reliever that some dogs are on. And I'm not savvy on different pain control for rabbits and horses as I am for dogs and cats, because those tend to be majority of my clients. Plus, I'm not the vet. I'm not supposed to stay up on all of this. But there are some pain relievers that just cut the pain, that just cut the edge. And maybe tramadol can make them a little drowsy. I did a consult yesterday with a dog, and the vet put the dog on tramadol twice a day. And the dog said, could I just have it at night? I don't think I need it in the daytime. So I said to her, ask the vet if that's okay, because the dog was not severe in pain, but really wanted to just sleep really well at night and be more vibrant during the day. I said, ask if that's okay. If it is okay, try it. And then it may shift. You may see she or he does fine for 3 weeks, 3 months, whatever, and then all of a sudden you're noticing, nope, she's limping too much in the daytime. I'm going to go back to that twice a day. So, you know, of course, trust your gut, work with your vet, listen to your animals. And then in regards to a medical care team, I feel it's very, very important, in case you can't tell, that you not only work with a traditional veterinarian, which is also known as a Western medicine practitioner or an allopathic medicine practitioner, but that you also work with a holistic veterinarian and an animal communicator. That could be and should be your medical care team. Medical for the animal communicator, not because we're diagnosing or prescribing, but because we're helping give feedback that you can take to the vet. I have many clients now with many veterinarians, and they'll say, well, what did Terry say the animal said? Well, the animal's saying that that medication's working, but it doesn't last as long as you thought. And so a lot of animal communicators are now, in conjunction with vets, able to help the animals that much more. And I now, when I first started doing this, I didn't have very many veterinarians that were respectful of animal communicators. Now I have numerous ones that refer to me. And that's all been over time, with them just coming in and getting a tidbit of information from the animal that was accurate, that helped them do their job. We're not competing. We're not overlapping. We're simply saying, here's some info. If it helps for you to do the prescribing, the diagnosing, the treating, we hope it helps. And then if there's a better outcome, there's a happier animal, there's a happier client. And if you don't have a holistic veterinarian and you're not sure there's one in your area, you can go to the Holistic Vet Association website, and it's A-H, V as in Victor, M as in Mary, A. So this, and it's .org, sorry. So this stands for American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association. AHVMA.org. And you can go in there and plug in your zip code, I think, and see who might be in your area. And some holistic vets will work by telephone, and especially for elder care. If you just say, I've gotten a recent blood test, and, you know, we don't really have a lot going on, or, yes, you know, we have hyperthyroidism, but it's treated with meds, but I just want to get an overall suggestion of, am I giving the best quality of care, the best nutrients, then some of them will do consultations over the telephone. Okay? All right, and tidbits for comfort, and then we're going to go into questions. Tidbits for comfort. Here's my pet peeves. No, maybe pet peeves is the wrong way to say it. Here's my number one, if you could make any changes, please make these changes. Cats, their litter boxes, they often can't move around very well when they're old in their litter boxes. We've asked them to potty in a tiny little rectangular spot their entire life. They're pretty darn good about it most of their life. It's pretty amazing that they are. You must clean them daily. And I don't mean maybe I clean them daily. You must clean them daily. And you must offer them a larger and a lower box when they start to get arthritic. It's very, very, very common that I get calls from people that say, my cat's never pottied outside the box. I had this earlier this week. Never pottied outside the box. She's 15 years old. All of a sudden, she's pooping right next to the box. Can you tell her to please step in the box and do the pooping in the box? No, but I can ask her why she's pooping outside the box. And she's pooping outside the box because the box is covered, and she can't position herself quite well anymore. She was showing me, literally, you know, if you imagine for a kitty to tuck their sacrum in order to poop, in order to angle it down towards the litter, when they're healthy and agile, that sacrum tucks, the poop plops out, and they're fine, and it's all done deal. When they're elders and they start to get arthritic and their spines don't move very well, when they teeter their pelvis under, their head goes up more. When their head starts to hit the top of the box, they tip back down. When they tip back down, they don't want to push the poop out because they're not angled right, and they literally have trouble maneuvering inside the box. Sometimes it's because it's a covered box. More often, it's because it's a small box. And, you know, kitties just need some room. They need, like, a runway. They need to be able to walk in, have some space, turn around, get the bowels moving. The bowels don't move like they used to. They are slower. They're slower coming down the pike. They're slower. The nerve endings are different, so they're not quite sensing. Do I have to poop right now? Maybe it's ready to come. Oh, I'm pushing. No, it's not quite ready to come. So all of that changes as they get older, and people forget to accommodate those changes. So if you could go to a lower, wider box, and one of the things I recommend is You can go to Home Depot type stores and go to the cement mixing area, and they sell for $5. I use these for my rabbits. For $5, they sell these big rectangular, I mean, they're not attractive. They're black, so if you want your litter box to be pretty or attractive, it's not going to happen. But they are lower to the ground. They're not real tall, and they're big and wide. And then put a shallow amount of litter in the box because it's like walking on the beach. What happens when you walk on the beach and the sand's real soft? More effort. It's more effort on all your muscles, from your foot muscles, to your calves, to your thighs, to your hips. Everything works differently when you're on soft, moving ground. You get more tired when you are on that. Well, when you're an elder kitty and you're stepping into a box and it's an uneven surface, sometimes you start to panic and think, I don't know if I'm going to stay up. I might fall. I think I need to step right out and step where the ground is solid and finish my business out here. So smaller amount of litter can really make a difference, bigger box. And if you have a very arthritic kitty, then maybe build a ramp so they can walk up the ramp and step into the box. Because if you can think about this, we are expecting elders to leap into a kitty litter box. They can't step one paw in and the next paw in. Imagine the spine as I say this. Left paw, left front paw, right front paw, what's happening? Spine's moving. Left rear paw, right rear paw, what's happening? Hips are moving. Sometimes that's too painful on their spine. Sometimes they're too locked up with rigidity of old bones and joints that it just doesn't move that way. So they kind of hop. They do bunny hopping a lot as cats get older. And they don't necessarily have the oomph to hop in or the trust to hop in. So make it as easy and as comfortable as possible. Litter boxes, tidbit for comfort for cats. Dogs, this is extremely important. Seems like a lot of people these days just love their wood floors. Well, you know what? Elder dogs don't. They are very scary to walk on. Keep their nails trimmed. A lot of times people get behind in the nail trimming, and elder nails grow faster. So when their nails are too long, it lifts their paw pads up from the ground because their nails are hitting the ground. So they end up straining in their paws. They're not walking as comfortably in their paws, which affects their wrist, which goes all the way up the legs, which you might not even notice it. I see it. If I walk into someone's home, I'll say, did you ever think about carpet runners since Sammy's getting so old? And they look at you like, well, Sammy does fine. He walks, you know, across the room. But when I tune into Sammy, Sammy's like, uh-oh, here I go, and there's tension, and there's stress, and there's worry crossing the whole floor. So if you have slippery surfaces and you have elder dogs, make sure their nails are trimmed. If for me, like with Jake, he had very hairy paws, and so I would take scissors and trim the hair off the bottom so his paw pads could grip the floor better so they weren't slipping and sliding. And to do carpet runners, I used to call them Jake's runways and make a big deal out of, we're going to just stay on the runway. Now we're going to the right, going to the runway, going to stay on the runway, as I would guide him and help him towards the end when he was pretty immobile on his own and I was using a harness. Horses, I've already mentioned this one. They need movement. Please don't confine them to stalls most of the day. I've literally seen how that ages a horse faster and how that deteriorates their quality of life and how they give up. So remember movement. Rabbits, help them move around. Sometimes rabbits who tend to lay around a lot anyhow, if they are not able to move around real well, again, slippery surfaces can be part of it, but sometimes when they become elders, they don't move around real well, and they will end up with urine scald because they'll go ahead and just urinate where they're laying, and the people don't see it, you know, in time, and they've laid in urine for 3 or 4 or 8 hours, and it can burn the skin. So sometimes putting a diaper on an elder rabbit if they're that immobile, but also just helping them move around a little bit. Like if you're around, just pick them up and move them to a different spot. If they haven't gone off to the left-hand corner in a long time and there's a carpet over there and they just haven't, scoot them over there and move them over there and help them remember. Because sometimes when you feel vulnerable and you don't feel able to do something real well, you just kind of stay put or you just kind of avoid anything that might be scary. And a few other things for tidbits for comfort, and this one ties in with a question that I'm going to get to in a moment, and that is body temperatures do drop with age with animals, so they need more warmth for comfort. Heated cat beds, that ties in with a question I'm going to get to. Horse blankets. Maybe your horse only needed a blanket in the dead of winter. Now your horse needs it in the fall and early spring. So pay attention to their body temperature, and if are they shivering, are they dropping weight, are they burning more calories to stay warm. Put dog beds or kitty beds near heating vents. Just move them over towards the heating vent. More hay for small critters. Just give them bigger places to nest or more enclosed areas where they won't be exposed to drafts. And, of course, for comfort, we have to assist with movement. And I'm going to be sending out a newsletter here in the next few weeks probably via my email. And one of my clients recommended this harness, so I'm going to share that as a good harness to use. But harnesses are important. There's all kinds of, in pet catalog, steps for animals now, steps to get into beds. A lot of times people say, well, I just have to lift it. I just heard this today, or yesterday. I have to lift my dog into the bed, but she does fine launching off. So when I ask the dog, how's it feel when you launch off? Well, it really hurts my wrist, but I get through it. So if they're elders, just help them up and down. If they're too big to lift, get some steps, get some ramps. Don't allow them to jump in and out of the vehicles and assume everything's okay, because they end up hurting themselves. And my girl Shiloh was Aussie. She was stubborn, boy. There would be times when I'd say, wait, and I'd be dropping down the back of the truck, and I'd say, the tailgate of the truck, and I'd be getting the ramp out, and I'd say, wait, wait, and I'd have to put my hand up, and, you know, she'd be 14 years old, I'm fine, and she'd leap out if I wasn't on top of her completely, and I'd watch her hit, and I would just cringe, because as she hit, all four legs kind of buckled a little. She didn't fall, but I just watched how all the joints took the blow, and I'd say, Shiloh, we need to do the ramp. So sometimes they're just busy being who they are, and we do have to tell them, no, sorry, I'm not letting you do that to your joints. You're going to wait, and you're going to follow, you know, some instructions on using ramps or stairs or whatever. Things that you can do, in other words, to help them with their mobility. And they have a lot of pride. Animals have a lot of pride, so don't make a big deal out of it. Like Jake had a lot of pride when I would get him up to go outside, and I had to lift him with the harness. And I would just use a real positive voice and say, come on, bud, this is what we're going to do. Let's go. We're going outside. And other people would say, I'm so sorry you can't move, honey. Come on, we'll just get you out, and you'll be okay. That doesn't help. So just be upbeat, be as positive as you can, don't notice. If other people are saying, oh, that poor dog, I can't believe he has to walk that way, say, you know what, he's walking and he's actually okay, so he doesn't really need to have you feel sorry for him right now. So quality of life is very important, and preparing to let go is the final stage of what happens. I can do an entire talk on death and dying, so I'm not going much into the details of death and dying, but I will emphasize that euthanasia versus allowing an animal to live with limitations can be a really gray area. And the main ways in which that realm is affected is your ability to be with the animal who has limitations. For me, for example, with Jake, he couldn't walk very well, but I worked from home, so I could take him out and potty break him several times a day. If it was somebody else who had to be gone 10 hours a day and the dog was laying there in feces and urine and getting more and more discouraged and more unhappy and more sick, then that's a factor that is going to influence, is it time to help them go versus are they ready? Finances, we have to face this, everybody. Finances can be something that affects us. I mean, I have some clients that have taken out second mortgages on their homes to pay for chemotherapy, to hurry up and keep, you know, got to get that chemo in and keep my doggie alive, and 3 months later the cancer comes back and the doggie dies. And I just think, you know, if we would quit panicking about the death, because they're not panicking about their death, they're not afraid of their death, and be present with them and be realistic with what we can afford, and don't try and do things to avoid death, but instead think of it this way: what can I do to offer comfort and love and help you be in the present moment until you don't want to be or until you can't do it comfortably? Joy factor is very important. Is your animal joyful? Jake had a harness and leg braces the last 2 years of his life. Anybody that saw him, anybody that met him, took him to classes even in that state. He was a happy guy. His tail wagged. He kissed you. He was happy. If we start feeling sorry for something that we're seeing, then we're not able to listen to how are they truly doing. So check in on their joy factor. Are they being social? Are they being playful? Are they being happy? And dignity is very important. For me, with Shiloh, very different experience than with Jake, because Jake embraced his limitations and lived with them to the fullest until he couldn't, and he started fading within a couple of weeks and was ready to go. So he had a long journey of limitations, and he didn't mind a bit. Shiloh was 15, which is a nice long time, and her bladder started to go, and she had bladder infections, and it's possible she had bladder cancer, but I wasn't going to put her through any procedures or anything at that age. But she wasn't suffering, per se, physically, but boy, her pride was really affected, and I watched her spirit go down, and then when her legs got weak in the back end and she couldn't get up and jump up, she whimpered and cried and showed me sad eyes, and she said to me one day, if this is how it's got to be, I don't want to do it. This is not me. This isn't who I am. And she showed me within a matter of 3 weeks, deteriorating spiritually and emotionally, she did it. You know, she needed that process. So here was Jake that embraced it for years, and here was Shiloh that said, uh-uh, ain't going there, don't like this, rather check out. And she allowed herself to deteriorate for a few weeks, which gave me the understanding it was time to call the vet and help her go for her dignity more than anything else. So there's different factors. Quality of life is the most important thing to look at. So in answering the question that somebody asked, how can you tell when an animal is ready to let go, ask yourself, are they participating in their life? You know, are they eating? Are they happy? Are they looking at you? Are they simply elders who can't do a whole lot, but they're still participating, or are they unhappy? And signs of suffering that I always tell people to watch for, these are signs of suffering, which means this is when it's time to probably call the vet, call the animal communicator if you want. Somebody did ask me, you know, how do you handle if somebody's asking if they're ready to go? I had somebody call the other day, and she said, I'm going to euthanize my dog tomorrow or the next day, and I need you to talk to it. And I said, no. First of all, I was booked, but second of all, I don't do that. I won't ask an animal, are you ready to die today or Saturday? Nobody's going to ask that question in their right mind, I hope, ethically, because an animal doesn't say, I'm ready to die today or I'm ready to die tomorrow. What we do as animal communicators is we ask, how are you doing? What do you need your people to know? If the people are saying, she won't get up off her bed, then I ask, how are you doing when you don't get up off your bed? I'm fine. I'm peaceful. I'm getting weak, but it's okay. My process is unfolding. Or, I'm miserable. I'm really scared. I can't move across the wood floor. Or, I used to be okay with it, but I'm wearing out and I'm getting tired of this. So there can be all kinds of answers, but the things to look for is how are they doing with their life and are they suffering? And so back to my comment about signs of suffering, if they are panting all night long, not because it's hot out, if they are pacing, a lot of times they don't pace, no matter what kind of animal they are, because of limited mobility, but some do. If they're acting irritable, if they can't get comfortable, sometimes people say she sleeps for about a half hour, and then she gets up and whimpers a little bit and goes to another spot and plops down and tries to sleep, and they just can't sleep, they just can't get comfortable, they feel irritable, and another symptom is they're just not interested in much. Nope, he doesn't want to eat anymore. He doesn't really want much touch. He doesn't really want much interaction. Sometimes they want food all the way to the end, so don't wait for that to be the only sign. Jake had probably 3 dozen biscuits the day the vet was coming. He loved biscuits, and he said, bring them on. He just got as many biscuits as he wanted. So they often will not stop eating, per se. If they've got a digestive illness, yeah, then yes, lack of appetite and going downhill that way can really make a difference. So those are all signs of suffering if you're trying in your troubled head to figure out some answers. But work closely with your veterinarian. Follow your heart more than anything else because you know your animal better than anybody else. And in another question that was asked, how can we make the transition easier for them? My answer to that is be present, be honest, which means be honest with your feelings. It's okay to say, I said to Jake, I'm going to miss you so much, this is going to be hard, and I understand you need to go. So be honest. Be patient with them. If they're changing, if they're not listening to you very well, if they're yowling, check in on your own patience level. Be loving with them, which I shouldn't have to tell people, but such as the people on this call, but sometimes we get grumpy. I got irritable, during the blizzards of 2 years ago in Colorado, trying to move Jake in and out of the snow. I wasn't grumpy with him, but I was grumpy. It was hard. I was shoveling snow every hour and could barely lift him, and we fell a couple of times, and I just got worn out, and I got grumpy, and I had to check in and make sure I wasn't grumpy at him and try and bring my love energy back. So just be focused on being loving and willing to flounder a bit when you goof up. Like when I realized I was getting grumpy, I told him, I'm not grumpy at you, I'm grumpy at these snowstorms. And I would just tell him very, clearly, but I would tell him I need a break, and I would go off and stretch or do something to get some of the grumpiness out of me. In other words, it's not easy. It's not easy to help elder animals, okay? And just be gentle with yourself. And in asking the question, how can you tell if an animal is in pain, the animal will tell you, and utilize the services of an animal communicator is a good way. But I already mentioned the signs of suffering that are also signs of pain. Whimpering, panting, unable to sleep, moving from place to place, those are all often signs of pain. Animals usually are not like humans. They're not going to call out in pain. They're not going to moan all the time. They're not going to cry all the time. They're not going to scream most of the time. All different animals tolerate pain very differently. But when it gets pretty extreme, you can tell. Next question, how about if an animal is on pain meds, but you're not sure if they're working or still effective? Again, not to promote animal communication over and over again, but that is a really good usage of the services of an animal communicator for fine-tuning. I do a lot of that with my clients. Now, I don't tell them, oh, up their meds. I check in and find out, how are you doing? You get a pain med off the person. When do you give it to them? I give it to them in the morning before work. Okay, so you get your pain med in the morning. How do you do through the day? Well, I start getting achy in the afternoon, but then I sleep, and then she comes home and feeds me, and I get another one, so I'm doing okay. Or my elbows start to throb, you know, and I'm laying there hurting, and I need more quantity, and I'll say, ask the vet if they can have more. So this is about fine-tuning, knowing whether or not they need help. And for myself, with my own animals, I had to get a friend to check in with Jake and Shiloh because I couldn't, you can't do your own checking in sometimes because it's too close to home, it's too close to the heart, and you're too concerned about them. So get the help of somebody else. So you're evaluating their quality of life. In seeing if their pain meds are working. Are they eating? Are they interacting? Are they wagging their tail? Are they responsive? Okay. Next question. What are ordinary elderly traits, such as the yowling, versus something indicating a problem to be addressed? So I did incorporate that one into the talk, but I did want to emphasize there's no clear-cut answer to this question. So remember that. And so your job is to be as tuned in as you can, notice changes when they happen, and if something feels like it's escalating, get them into a vet right away. Or if it's been a while and they're an elder, take them in for a wellness exam. Take them in for a blood check and a thorough exam. And say no to the vaccinations and things that are going to bombard their system in a bad way, but just get a health checkup. So the answer to that truly is it's going to vary. Okay. How to best tell the difference? What's the ordinary elderly traits? Oh, and how to best tell the difference. Ask the animal through an animal communicator what's going on and a good veterinarian you trust that can say, well, this is typical or this is not. And next question, if given a choice, do animals want to be medicated for their chronic pain or problem, or do they prefer to tough it out naturally? Or is this situation as individual as it is with people? If so, how can you tell what they want, especially if you have well-behaved animals who take whatever you give them? The answer to this is, for the most part, animals want happiness and joy. They want the ability to be in the moment as fully as possible. And so with that said, it's very difficult for them to have their bodies cause them to slow down just as it is with humans. As I've said, they still want to jump and run and bounce and play. So at first, when they're aging, they have to start accepting their limitations. And then when things get tougher, they often do need pain relief. So I have addressed that in the talk as well. Usually they do welcome the opportunity to be in less pain. I rarely have had an animal say, no, really, I'm fine, I'll just let it hurt. I mean, that usually doesn't happen. They will say, I'm okay, I've got it under control, I'm not focused on the pain. But I believe pain, offering them comfort as naturally as possible for as long as possible is key. Okay? So check in with your own heart, let them show you their joy, get clarity from a good animal communicator, but remember, you know them better than anyone else, and you'll get a good sense. Next question. My canine and feline elders love to sleep in a heated pet bed. Do you know of any dangers from heating polyurethane foam, the major component of these beds, or heating covering materials, which I assume have been treated with flame retardant chemicals? And then she wrote, I bring this up because I've recently learned about potential adverse effects to human infants from off-gassing of the flame retardants, and it has been implicated in sudden infant death syndrome. I found it fascinating that I got this question because that is extremely specific. And wasn't it interesting that the day before I got that question, I was handed an article by this vet that I took Merlin into about, she said, I thought you might want to know about this, about flame retardant chemicals and how they're being directly linked to hyperthyroidism in cats. Cats are laying on the furniture that are treated with these chemicals, and they are grooming themselves regularly because they're very good about keeping themselves clean, and they are taking this into their systems. They have been testing cats, and they have found high quantities of these in their systems. And so by no means am I an expert on this, but these are PBDEs. P as in Paul, B as in boy, D as in dog, E as in elephant. PBDE levels are in our furniture. And so just recently I had a kitty that hasn't been able to be diagnosed. This is the day after I got this article, too. And she's vomiting and diarrhea a lot. And I said, you know what? I just learned this. And she just got brand new sofas, by the way. I just learned this. I don't know if it's part of it, but could you throw a sheet over your sofa, which her kitty loves to sleep on the sofa and sleeps on it all day long. Throw a sheet over your sofa so your kitty's not in contact with the actual material and see if your kitty does better. Because she's already working with a vet for the treatment, but was trying to get to the cause. So heated kitty beds, what do we do about that? I'm not sure, to tell you the truth, because I'm learning as you are learning, but I would say go as natural as possible, and cats do love warmth. And so, for example, I have a heating pad that I inserted underneath a fake lamb's wool thing kitty bed for my kitties in the wintertime, and a heating pad for humans. To my knowledge, it's not treated, it's very old, it's not treated with flame retardant chemicals. And I know that the kitty bed is not treated with flame retardant chemicals, that particular one. So I would say go as natural as possible is always our key. If there's anything you're suspecting, avoid it, and ask your animals, because they have wisdom and they can help us know. All right. And let's see, I think I have one more question. Oh, nope, that was the last one. Perfect. Perfect timing. Okay, good deal. So in summary, I just want to say, remember that animals are not afraid to die, and they're not afraid to get old. And so quit being afraid for them. They don't need your fear, and they don't need your worry. They need your love, and they need your assistance, and they need your ability to keep them comfortable, and they need your confidence on their behalf. And I know that's hard to say and hard to do, but just check in with yourself regularly. How much am I over-worrying? I have a lot of clients say, I know, I worry all the time. But then I don't think they do much about it. And it really does affect the quality of life of our animals. So embrace where they're at. Be honest. If you can say, I'm going to be so sad when you go, or it's so hard for me to, I used to say to Jake, it's so hard for me to see that you can't walk, buddy. I'm so sorry you can't, but you're still looking happy to me. And he would wag his tail as soon as I'd say it. And I'd say, okay, so I'm done worrying about it. And I would just be honest with myself. Okay, so I remind you, please realize that animals don't mind aging, and they do need to have their process where they begin to notice their body is shifting and changing. If you euthanize an animal just because they're becoming slower or they're headed into a problem, you're robbing them of the opportunity to have their spiritual journey where they start to notice their body is deteriorating. They don't like what they see, but they need to feel it. They need to be with it. They need to prepare themselves emotionally and spiritually. They need to prepare you emotionally and spiritually. It's a journey they need, so don't be afraid to allow that journey to happen. Keep them comfortable during that journey. When they don't appear comfortable, then that's when you're faced with the blessing of euthanasia rather than it being a burden. Okay, so that is the talk, and I squeezed it all on in. It's 10:17. I could have gone on and on about some of these. I really thank you all so very much for participating in this particular talk. My next talk is going to be on November 8th. It's my last talk of the year. It's on household harmony with various animals. I'll be touching the topic of when we merge households, when we add animals, perhaps when we foster animals, perhaps when animals are shifting and changing, becoming elders or become sick, how does that affect our household, etc. And I look forward to having all of you join next time if you can. Thank you so much for being here, and have